Welcome to the Fabric Podcast. In our conversation, Enough. Enough seems to have an appetite of its own. And in this episode, Greg Meyer speaks with Nick Tyson as they wander together at that pursuit of enough comfort.
Nick, tell us what you did last year.
I took a trip to the Boundary Waters, just me, myself, and I, for 6 weeks, and left my phone in the car. So wow. Out in the wilderness for 6 weeks.
Mm-hmm. Why did you do that?
Wonderful question. I ask myself that question a lot. Ultimately, it comes down to I don't know, and that's a good, fun way to say it, but really, I wanted to cut the noise. I wanted to get away from the distraction and enter into a place of silence, I suppose, as a mode of self-discovery in a way that I just hadn't done before.
What did you find there?
Silence, aloneness, belongingness.
This is our third week talking about enough. Enough, you know, that thing you can never quite get, and yet at the same time, that thing that is all you need. Sufficient, you are content, enough. In the world most of us live in, we're tortured by the allure of enough, and it doesn't matter how much or how little you have. There's always more, always something you're missing. Enough isn't a question of amount. It is a question of the soul. It's a question we will never solve, but if we don't get a handle on it, well, like we've been saying, it will push you to do and to be and to have things that don't matter, and it'll do it at the expense of things that do. Today, we are talking about enough comfort, and we're doing it with Nick Tyson, photographer, storyteller, thinker, and writer, who is joining me to tease out the real story of comfort so that we might have a chance at realizing what enough of it is. You can find examples of Nick's work at theembersway.com. 2 weeks ago, I asked you to make a list of the words that surround the idea of enough. Today, I asked Nick to do the same with me around the ideas of comfort and discomfort. Let's go back to that conversation. So, Nick, you want to play free association with me?
Oh, let's do it. Yeah.
Okay. First, words that you associate with comfort, okay? Mm-hmm. I'll go first. Relaxed.
Enough.
Happy.
Peace.
Convenient.
Vulnerability.
Certainty.
Invitation.
At peace.
Cozy.
Familiar.
Playful.
Nice. That wasn't a comment. That was my word.
I like it. Okay, cool. Maybe a little bit more negatively charged, complacent.
Harmony.
Like lack of motion or lack of creativity.
A lot of my words have double-edged to them as well, like this one, satisfied.
Yeah, there's a lot of double-edged words. Brokenness, maybe ironically.
Okay, yeah. So that's a good segue to the other side, because the other one I want to play free association with is discomfort. And most people would have put brokenness in that one, but...
Well, I'll put it in that one as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to jump in on unhappy.
I also want to put vulnerability in this one.
Okay. Unfamiliar.
Distress.
Unknown.
Noisy.
Change.
Fast or rapid.
Uncertainty.
Loss.
Oh, ouch. Worry.
Forgetfulness.
Tension.
Misunderstanding.
Conflict.
Disharmony.
Unresolved.
Ooh, I feel all these words in my body right now.
I always like to make my interviewees feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, this is great.
Yeah, those words, I feel them too. We didn't list a lot of things. We were listing lots of feelings, it seems.
Yeah.
What was comfortable or uncomfortable about your 6 weeks in the Boundary Waters?
Well, I can start with comfortable. And of course, this is all through my lens. Something that was comfortable for me was taking the time away to be alone. That's something I thrive on. And especially with the pandemic, where I feel like I'm always around people, you know, and being at home, people are always at home. And so it's hard for me to find that. The location in the Boundary Waters is a place that I'm very familiar with. I've been up there many times. And so I feel like I know the place in a way. It feels like a home to me. And so that was comfortable. I suppose on the uncomfortable front, I'd never really done anything like that before. Not to that extent of being alone and in the silence. And so it felt a little bit like I was standing on the edge of a chasm and I couldn't see the other side. And so I really had no idea what to expect. And so that unknown was pretty uncomfortable, which perhaps is a reason that I went on the trip.
You experienced a lot of discomfort and temperature bugs, not having a chair for 6 weeks to sit on.
Actually, this brings up a point that I often forget about in thinking about my trip and feel a little bit ashamed to admit, but one of the hardest parts of the trip was actually not knowing the weather, which sounds so funny to say. It sounds so menial, but not knowing if it was going to rain or what the temperature was going to be. And I was there in kind of the fall time, so late August through September into October. And so it got a little bit cold, but not knowing the weather, that unexpected, like living with that unexpected, you know, basically every hour looking up, oh, is it going to rain? I don't know. Do I have to secure all my stuff? That was actually difficult. Physical discomfort was certainly a theme on the trip.
So these discomfort things that you're talking about, were they things that you found yourself trying to avoid, or were they portals, doorways to something that you had gone there for?
That's a wonderful way to ask that question. I found myself continually coming to this place of, say, recognizing a fear and not wanting to go there, and some unconscious part of me not wanting to go there even. But I think with that being said, I'm really interested in those places and in those points of fear, because, you know, this sort of ties into a deep theme of the trip for me, of actually going to that place of aloneness and sort of stepping away from all of the stories that I had crafted myself to be and crafted the world to be.
You know, it's interesting that in our little word game there, neither of us said fear.
Yeah.
But fear and comfort seem to be battling each other, right? Fear is an element of discomfort.
Yeah.
So when I'm listening to you, my guess is when a lot of us think about, you know, heading into the wilderness for 6 weeks, we think about a lot of physical discomfort. Like, you're in the wilderness, you're living in a tent and a sleeping bag, which is relatively comfortable, but, you know, you're exposed to elements. That's where people are going to be dwelling. I mean, that's where my mind goes at first. But when I hear you talk about it, those are issues, but comfort or lack of comfort for you seem to not be physical. It seemed to be more existential.
I feel like the word existential gets a bad rap sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, it's a little bit like in the cloud. And I think I'm glad you brought that up, because I think that actually brings to light a deep reason for the trip. Those lines between physical and non-physical are pretty hazy. What is the self, and how are we related to each other, and where do I end and you begin? And that is really palpable. It was really palpable for me in the wilderness. Where do I end and the rest of the world begin? Because in that silence, you know, in that natural setting, nature is just being itself. It's not pretending to be anything else. And so it's sort of this radical invitation to me to be myself.
So this connection between silence and comfort is very inobvious. And it wasn't on either of our lists. But in talking to you before, I'm convinced that there's a really strong connection there. And I want us to unpack that. And that might kind of happen gradually here. But when I throw out the title to this week, Enough Comfort, to me, the obvious thing is, like, this isn't like, how much self-indulgence are you going to give yourself? Or are you permitted to have? You're allowed to have this much comfort. And beyond that, you're exercising privilege in a way that's no longer responsible. And that's probably a decent conversation to have. But the more I dig into it, that's not what this conversation's about at all. In fact, the whole question, like, how much comfort, is kind of like the how much money. It's just the wrong question. And I think there's some deeper questions within there that are a lot more important. And well, I boil them down to two, and you and I have talked about this before. And the first question is this: in what do you find comfort? When you were in the Boundary Waters, I don't know that you went there to try to find comfort, but nonetheless, I think as human beings, we're constantly seeking to be, you know, I don't think we seek to be uncomfortable necessarily. Yeah. So we're seeking that. So what did you find comfort in while you were there? What I heard from you earlier is that you had this strong sense that your discomfort wasn't something to be avoided, but it was a key to finding the comfort you're actually looking for.
Yeah, no, that's a wonderful way to put it. I think, especially lately, I'm using the word brokenness a lot in sort of substitute for some of that. And so it's like the brokenness is, they're not opposite ends of the spectrum. And actually going into something that is uncomfortable, I think it has the ability to sort of strip away a story, or at least a layer of a story that we have about ourselves or about the world around us. And that story we tell because it makes it comfortable. It makes the world familiar. Going into the discomfort, it's easy to feel fear, but finding the edge where it actually transforms into curiosity, you suddenly don't need bravery to go into that uncomfortableness. You only need curiosity, because it's something to be learned then. It is a portal. It is a doorway to a whole other, you know, understanding of something. Fear acts as a lock on that door, and curiosity opens it.
I loved how you started saying this and you just paused. You said brokenness is, and then you were like looking for your next words. But I said, no, just you, that's it. Brokenness is. I mean, that is our reality, right? And a lot of my discomfort comes from my not wanting to acknowledge that there's a lot of broken crap in my life. And that can sound like really heady and really existential, but it's actually just very, very factual.
Yeah,
I know there's all kinds of hypocrisy in the way I'm living. In the current situation right now, I fully intend and trying to be anti-racist, but I know there's a lot of racism in me. I love my kids, I love my wife, I love my community, love my neighbors, but I also know that my relationships with them are all compromised in ways, and I'm complicit in not helping them be healthy. I mean, I am broken, and I will never perfect myself out of that, and that isn't the expectation. But what I would like to do is hide that reality from myself. So silence. How does silence reveal that to us?
Silence is the best listener ever. You know, it listens without judgment. It listens without responding, obviously, right? Silence. But it has the potential to act as a perfect mirror to ourself, if we're willing to listen, if we're willing to see, not just look, but see, you know?
I really resonated with how you were talking about how we like to separate wholeness and brokenness. We think brokenness is the antithesis and we need to hide, you know, run away from it. But actually, until we've acknowledged it, there's no way to approach wholeness. And then silence, what you're saying, being the great listener. And silence is so patient because it never speaks.
Yeah.
As you said, it's as patient as I am, you know, plus one. And it invites me to come back and be more patient with the next time. So in order to find silence to be persistent enough that you could no longer fight against it, you had to go to the wilderness for 42 days.
And I probably do need to again.
Well, of course.
Yeah. But yeah.
So in the Bible, comfort's a big conversation. Wilderness is a big conversation. Silence is actually a really big conversation. But just listening to that, so you go into the wilderness for 42, we're going to round it to 40 days and 40 nights.
Yeah, yeah.
Just for this part of the conversation. You went into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights to discover who Nick really is. Trite, simplistic, but...
Yeah, some version of that.
Something.
Yeah.
Long, long ago, Israel left slavery. They were stuck in a system where they didn't even know who they were. They couldn't be about what they wanted to be about. They knew that they were imprisoned to something, and so they had to head into the wilderness to figure out who they were. Hmm. And that wilderness was transformative. And one of the interesting details that I've always thought was incredibly allegorically true is that nobody who started the journey ended it. Everybody died on the way. And only the only people who ended the journey were the next generation.
Wow.
Oh, and so wow. You don't start this kind of a wilderness journey of 40 days and 40 nights or 40 years and 40, whatever, and come out the same person. A new person is born there. And that, but it's not discontinuous either. It's still you, Nick. And what's on the other side is freedom.
Yeah, that's a wonderful way to say it. And I wanna bring this down to a really unglamorous level, because it can sound like this really big, you know, transformative death, rebirth kind of thing. But the poet David White has this phrase where he says, no individual will survive a conversation. So even bringing it down to something as everyday as a conversation, I think that's true for all of us, really. You know, we're always changing every moment. And so there is a death, birth experience, I suppose, that happens really on a moment-to-moment basis. And a big question, I think, is how aware of it we want to be. And it can be quite a frightening thing to be aware of it, but also seemingly like the most life-giving thing to be aware of. I remember there was one day where it was really windy the entire day, you know, just relentless wind. And it was pretty exhausting. I couldn't even canoe that day because one person in the canoe is too windy. I couldn't navigate. So I just, over the course of the whole day, I was like wearing down this relentless wind. And come nighttime, when it was getting dark, the wind died down, went away. So I remember I made a fire, and I was just sitting there in this really quiet space, and the quiet juxtaposed with the noisy wind of the rest of the day was sort of this new place of quiet. And the quiet suddenly, you know, wasn't just an absence of noise, but actually was like entering into like a vast language. And the comfort in that is pretty remarkable. It actually was the grounds of a whole new discovery, a whole new language of discovery.
1 Kings 19. The messenger of the Lord, that's Yahweh, I am who I am. The messenger of the Lord came, touched Elijah, and said, get up and eat, otherwise the journey will be too much for you. Elijah got up and ate and drank. Then he went in the strength of that food 40 days and 40 nights to Horeb, the mount of God. At that place, he came to a cave and spent the night there. Then the word of the Lord came to him, saying, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, go out and stand on the mountain before the Lord, for the Lord is about to pass by. Now there was a great wind, so strong that it was splitting mountains and breaking rocks in pieces before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, a sound of sheer silence. When Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. Then there came a voice to him that said, what are you doing here, Elijah? I have no idea if that has anything to do with your story, but the coincidence was notable.
I think it probably does. Yeah. Wow. Yeah.
Silence wasn't just the wind stopping and the relief. It wasn't just relief from wind. It was, so which would just be the removal of a discomfort. It was an addition of a comfort. It gave you something. Yeah. It was a positive thing, not just the removal of a negative.
I don't even want to say more than that, because that's so well said. Yeah.
Silence makes us so uncomfortable. Yet we need it. And yet it has such a ability to speak. those who are patient with silence will hear what they need to hear.
It's a really good teacher.
One of our comforts, I think, that we have is to fill our life with noise, and which can be, you know, audible. Just keep the TV on, the radio on while you're home doing stuff. Walking with your headphones on, running with your headphones on.
Right.
But it's also always doing something. I'm, you know, I'm busy.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, like that still small voice. I love that phrase, you know, it's like, oh yeah, I think we've all felt that. And even then, it, you know, under this notion of silence, not just being an absence of something, it suddenly makes way for the experience of finding that silence in the midst of anything, you know, silence in the midst of noise, in the midst of busyness, because it's not dependent on the removal of the noise.
The story is trying to poke at some of that deeper wisdom that you're tying into there as well. It's, this isn't just a story, but you know, it doesn't say the, you know, the wind, the earthquake, the fire stopped, and now there was silence. No, it says, actually, I know in Hebrew because I spent so much time with this story, it's the phrase is kol demamarecha. In kol, the first word there is a voice. So, and the way it's translated in this Bible is this, the sound of sheer silence. It isn't just sheer silence. It's the sound of sheer silence. Like it is audible. There's just nothing to hear, which is illogical, but you know, I think we know what it means, right? It is a voice of no sound. The sound of sheer silence is not a bad way to say it. One of comfort's purposes is to not only be able to sit with silence, but to find comfort in that. Thank you, Nick. I can use that. So you bring us this next question. So the two questions that I think are so much better than am I comfortable enough, or how much comfort am I allowed to have, or something like that, is one is, and what am I finding my comfort? And the second question is, well, what does that comfort provide you? What role does it play in your life? And I see comfort playing two roles. Artificially divided, I'm sure, but generally the two roles. And one is comfort can either be a fortress for us or it can be a launching pad. And when it's a fortress, I'm using comfort in a way to protect me, to keep me from being uncomfortable. That's the ultimate thing. I don't want to be uncomfortable, whatever that means for me. And it certainly has physical manifestations, but it's, I think, largely existential. It's like it's inner stuff that I'm afraid of and worried about. And probably unconscious of, but I use it as a fortress to protect me from the uncomfortable. The other option, though, is that I can use comfort as a launching pad that provides me, so it's providing me like a secure platform, a foundation from which I can brave the new, I can brave the unknown, I can take on change. Like you said, I don't even have to be brave because of curiosity. It gives me enough stability in my life, an anchor that I am secure enough and comfortable enough in my life that I can dare to be curious instead of afraid. Seeking comfort is something we human beings simply are going to do. But the question is, am I doing it to fortress myself, to protect myself, or am I seeking comfort? And that would be enough comfort, right? Am I seeking enough comfort that I can reach into the uncomfortable? Because that's where most of the world is for me.
And
there's this thing called change. And
what's that?
Well, I don't know exactly what change is, but it's inherently uncomfortable. And it's unavoidable. To me, it feels like if I fortress myself against change, I'm doing it at somebody's expense, certainly some of my own. But if I'm protecting myself that much that the winds of change no longer affect my life and I don't have to deal with them, what am I doing to other people and their need of that change? I mean, I'm right now can't help after Dante Wright and George Floyd, can't help think what that means in racial justice, but just what does it mean to my adolescent daughter who just loves to make her dad happy and now has grown into a teenager with a mind of her own and discovering that she has interests and abilities that I don't even register? And it's making me uncomfortable. So what kind of walls will I create around me and around her so that she doesn't go that way? I sure feel better. Makes my world easier. Makes me more comfortable. Is it making her more comfortable? Is it?
Yeah. Your words are hitting me in in the realm of experience. And, you know, it kind of comes down to, like, do we say yes to life or no to life? And that's this really cliche, kind of goofy way to phrase it. But it's, I mean, building those walls has an edge. It's not the only edge, but it has, I think we can find that edge where it is actually a saying no to life. It's saying no to change. It's saying no to the next unfoldment, the next step of the evolution of our life's journey. To recognize how uncreative that space is sort of reveals, I think, the freedom then of actually what it means to say yes to life.
Nick, that brings me to my last theory about comfort. And one is, we can find comfort in circumstances. I'm comfortable because of what's going on around me. I have enough money. The temperature's right. People around me are friendly. My stomach's full. I don't want to say those are bad or wrong things, but that's one place we find comfort.
Yeah.
But an alternative way of thinking about comfort is that it is a posture. Mm-hmm. It's not the circumstances around me that make me comfortable or not, but the way I stand or the way I sit in the midst of them so that I feel that I have comfort despite those circumstances. If I start thinking that comfort is a posture that I take on the world with, then that really drives me. So what is that comfort then? Is it really then? Is it enough money? It probably does mean having shelter, having my health, having those things probably are meaningful there, but it really drives me to this deeper place of where I'm finding my comfort.
You touched on something really foundational here. And I think that's the fact that it illuminates a question. It brings up the question of what is important. There's a writer, Bio Akomolafe, and he talks about the power of the question, just a question inherently. And he says, we do a disservice to questions when we expect them to produce answers. And so I think, like you're talking about, kind of coming to that place of asking that question of what is comfortable for me and what are my needs in order to be comfortable, which is in order to say yes to, you know, life, the unfoldment of life. And like sitting with that question, I think is immensely illuminating.
So would you say, in some ways, your time in the Boundary Waters helped you claim a posture, a comfort that you could then take with you elsewhere?
I think so. I mean, it seems to be that to be human is to engage in the cycle of remembering and then forgetting and continually going through that. And so I think it helped me claim that posture. I also see how I continually forget that posture. But in a big way, yeah, I think it was a big milestone, at least in my life, for that. I like that way of putting it.
I think it works that way for me, is that for me, a lot of growing up actually has been learning to be less dependent on my circumstances and more secure and who I am and what I've really surrounded myself with, which are things of the heart. And that gives me a posture that I can go curiously, or I can be brave enough to go counter some of those things that would otherwise feel uncomfortable. They'd feel threatening. They'd feel either unfamiliar or uncertain to me, knowing that there's treasure there, knowing that what's next is there. But like you say, you learn a posture, but every situation you bring that into, you have to learn how to apply it again and again and again. There is no fix. There's no like, oh, now I have reached enlightenment. And
yeah, there's no figuring it out, which is really uncomfortable, but also profoundly comfortable. It's just like, oh yeah, all there is change then.
So Nick, I am not trying to elevate you as the great guru on all this,
yeah,
but
good.
I really do appreciate your gutsiness as well as your breadth of vision to go into like take an experience on like that. and to seek to learn from it and to dare to share it with people. And you really do. You have thought deeply about these things. And I find it incredibly helpful myself just to listen to you and to talk with you about it. Just for the moment, to try to turn you into the great guru. from your experience, you know, in the 6 weeks in the Boundary Waters, as well as just life, what would you say to, or what's a recommendation? What would you give people who are grappling with comfort's role in their life?
Yeah, thanks for those kind words. I think the only way that I could speak about this would be to speak to my former self, even to speak to myself now. Something to the effect of, see the creator in everyone, see the creator in everything. And kind of to take that as an exercise, you know, as like a mantra almost throughout the day. Working at my cashier job, that's a mantra that I try to repeat a lot, like see the creator. Next person comes through my line, see the creator. And like to see that spark of divinity, that spark of life in everyone. It can sound like this really kind of just nice thing, but the profundity of that is something that I don't understand, but continually amazes me. Because it often seems to come back to, I don't know. You know, I just don't know. I don't know anything. That's if I walked away from this trip with one thing, it was a sense of that. I don't know. I deeply don't know. And when we come into contact with the creator or whatever we want to call it, that spark of divinity, like all I can do is just put my hands up and say, I don't know, but this is perfectly amazing. So thank you. It's just gratitude.
One of the things I like about your response to that is thinking about the people coming through your checkout line and I see the creator in you. Knowing that there's stuff in there that you would probably love and be amazed and could learn from. And then there's also stuff that you would not like and you would reject. Mm. And knowing that, oh, yes, all that, I see the creator in you. Because that is how the creator is. If I could actually see God, I would just be love and be amazed and in awe of some. And then there'd be stuff I'd say, what?
Yeah.
No, I don't like that. This yeah. That's like, it's not comfortable, at least, you know, for me and so on. And we need to know that's it, that, you know, that's part of my waking up. That's part of my knowing what this world is about, is to be not only find all the wonderful, amazing things, but just all the stuff that is unknown, uncertain, unsure, unfamiliar to me, and to, I not have to approve of it or disapprove of it, but to accept it. Anne Lamott, makes a great comment about that. She says, you know, you've created God in your own image when God hates all the same people you do.
And, wow. Yeah.
You know, so I would love to say to all those people coming through the checkout, I see the creator in you because there's these parts of you that are just like me and I love them. But no, there's parts of you that are just like me and I love them. And there's parts of you that I have no idea what to do with and don't even like, and I'm somehow going to love you anyway.
Gosh, that's beautiful.
So, wow, what a good exercise. And if I could do that, I would be way more comfortable in this world.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. It's a very small thing, but it's powerful. I mean, just because something defies my understanding or defies my approval doesn't mean it's not divine.
So we've had these big questions, these weeks, as we talked about enough. The first week we talked about the big question being, what is enough? It's a question to spend a life on. Then last week, when we were talking about enough money, we talked about the question, what are you trying to fill your life with in order to have, be, do enough? Mm. And then sort of the question that follows that is, how's that working for you? Mm. And then this week, the big question that I see in this conversation we've had around enough comfort is, what is that hole in yourself that you're trying to fill in order to be enough or in order to have enough? What is that hole? And your silence, Nick, you're inviting us to that place where we touch all things by being alone, where we hear what we need to hear by being in the presence of silence, where we recognize our brokenness is not something to fight, but something to face in order to begin to have a picture of wholeness. Yeah, that seems to say that that hole in me is my fear that my brokenness is actually just plain brokenness, that I am not worthy, that I need walls to protect myself because I don't want to know the truth.
Yeah, that hole that we're trying to fill isn't just a hole. It's actually a doorway. And it's interesting that we feel the need to fight it.
Yeah. So you went to the wilderness. So you went to the wilderness to try to turn your hole into a doorway. Think you made it through?
Partly, at least. Yeah. Yeah. Some version. I had not thought of it that way before, but I like that way of thinking about it. Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a question you can actually answer.
Yeah.
Nick, there is so much more that can be said about this. I appreciate your being with us today for this conversation. So
glad to be here. Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
For this conversation to have all the richness it could, share this podcast with a friend and find discussion resources at fabricmpls.com. We always love hearing from you through our contact page or on social media. And if you want to share those more personal thoughts about enough and what it is in your life, email those directly to Greg at enough@fabricmpls.com. It's worth this quick reminder that who you are is enough. We may not often feel it, but that's part of the reason we do this together. Life woven deeply.